看看你俩聊的啥。
Okay, welcome back to Math 3013. Let me begin today's lecture with some important announcements. First of all, next week is the second week of, the third week of the semester, and we're to return to, we haven't met face-to-face yet, but starting Monday, we are gonna begin face-to-face classes again. And in particular, this 11:30 section of linear algebra is going to meet 11:30 on Monday, but instead of doing an online version, a Zoom lecture, rather what I'm we're going to meet in the math building adjacent to Whitehurst in room 445 for a regular face-to-face in-person lecture. All right, so what that's going to mean is that the at least the first week, or I guess the third week of class, the first week of face-to-face courses, I will continue to try to record the lectures, but I'm going to get away from that as soon as I can. My reason for doing it next week is I want to make sure that the people who are wary about coming on campus, or in fact, if they're feeling ill or even have the sniffles, I would prefer you do not come to class because there's a good possibility you could be infected with the virus. And if we have a person comes to class who is then later diagnosed as having COVID, it means we're going to have to shut down and return to Zoom lectures for 2 weeks. So what I'll do at least next week is continue to publish the Zoom lectures. However, I'm going to be working on a blackboard, not on a pad of paper. And so the lectures that are recorded, what I do by hand, that's not shown on slides, but my comments that are based on the slide, but are going to be effectively drawn on a blackboard, I won't have a cameraman there, so I'll simply point my laptop, its camera, at a spot on the blackboard, but it's not the best way of transmitting that information. And so it's really best that you come to class to receive the lecture rather than to watch a recorded lecture. The quality is going to go way down if you look at the recorded lecture, and indeed you won't be able to interact as well. So please come to class next week, but I also ask you to mask up, because I do not want to have to shut down the face-to-face lectures because of a COVID infection within the class. But the other thing I want to do is, what I've noticed during the COVID period is that while initially the recorded lectures were used appropriately, students were attending class simultaneously when they are watching the lectures on screen simultaneously as they were being delivered. As the semester went by, my attendance for my simulcast lectures would drop down to like 20% of the class on any given lecture. And worse, it seems that oftentimes the lectures were not even reviewed the same day, rather the lectures, recorded lectures, were allowed to sort of build up until right before the exam, in which it's not a good time to prepare for the exam to look at lectures that occurred 3 weeks prior to that in preparation. So what I'm gonna want to do as soon as it's logistically possible and it's safe to do so is to drop the recorded lectures and simply work as an ordinary face-to-face class meet, face-to-face lecture. But I will not impose upon you that directly, and I certainly won't impose it upon you until the COVID situation on campus becomes clearer. But all that said, just be prepared to come to class on Monday at 11:30 in the math building in room 445. Okay, any questions on that? I see one in chat. So a second thing to point out before we begin today's lecture in earnest is that the first problem set on WebAssign tonight at midnight. And so try to get that done. I will accept late submissions up to a point. I'm leaving the assignments up throughout the semester. So if you don't complete an assignment before its due date, you can still complete it after its due date. It's just what WebAssign will do is it will notify me that this assignment was turned in late. That helped me to track how the students are staying concurrent with the homework. But certainly if you haven't done a problem set and an exam is coming up, it's worth your time to go to WebAssign and they explicitly complete that problem set. And you will be able to do that. But the first one is due tonight. And then a second problem set that I'll officially assign on WebAssign this afternoon, that is going to be due a week from today. Okay? So while I'm talking about WebAssign, are there any issues that you've encountered with WebAssign? Homework set one? Okay, well, good. I hope that's going well. If you do have problems, you can always email me or raise questions about WebAssign problem sets or examples done in class. You can always interrupt me during lecture and I'll try to answer those questions. Okay, so with those announcements out of the way, let's go to the subject of today's lecture, which is going to be more about matrices and operations we can perform on matrices. So last Monday in the preceding lecture, I did introduce matrices already. Here's how they came into play. So introduction of matrices. The way I introduce these objects is I had you consider large systems of linear equations. So here I'm writing down one linear equation, That means that, let me write an example down, then I'll explain it. X1, M, Xn is equal to D1, and then I'll have similar equations. I'll label An1, X1 plus An2, X2 plus Anm, Xm is equal to Bn. And what I want you to imagine here, these dots indicate this sort of pattern is continuing until you reach an nth line that looks like the ladder. What this represents is n equations that are in fact linear equations in m unknowns, right? Certain numbers times variables summed up equals particular numbers. That's the form of any individual equation. And my notation is such here that these numbers aij, or a11 in this particular instance, is it represents a number that's multiplying a variable x1. The subscripts here are indicating, well, the first one's indicating which equation we're looking at, and the second index is telling you the variable that's attached to this particular coefficient in this particular equation. Okay, so that's the data that goes into specifying a large system of linear equations. And what we did last time is we consolidated this information in mathematical objects called matrices. First and most general example is to take all these numbers that are the coefficients and arrange them in a rectangular formation. One m. So I'm just extracting the coefficients in the first equation, and I'm using that to form a row of numbers that I'm inserting inside these square braces. Then I'll take the coefficients from the second equation, and I'll similarly insert them at the row, the second row of a larger rectangular arrangement of numbers, and I'll keep doing that until I reach the coefficients that occur in the last equation. And this is what we'll call an N by M matrix. And then similarly, we can collect the variables in similar objects. These rearrange vertically, x1 through xm. And we can put the numbers that appear on the right-hand side of these equations, we can encapsulate them also in another one of these rectangular arrangements of numbers. I'll put the equal sign there because, in fact, what we learned on Monday is, aside from just encapsulating the data that goes into specifying a given set of equations, this equation here, which is formal at this point, is actually equivalent to the original set of equations once I know how to interpret the left-hand side appropriately. This is to be thought of as the product. So it's a sort of multiplication of one matrix times another. And in fact, on in Monday's lecture, I just defined exactly how to compute this product. What happened is that once that product was defined and computed, it turned out that this matrix equation reproduced it exactly, the original set of equations, component by component. What happens when you evaluate the left-hand side is you're going to get a list of numbers. And the first number is actually going to be this sum of numbers. And it'll be set equal to B1, comparing components on both sides of the equation. The second component of this product is going to be exactly the left-hand side of the corresponding equation. All right, so that's how matrices were introduced. What I want to do today is focus on this product. Lots of practice computing these products. Yeah, I'm sorry, is there a question? Okay, maybe a microphone was on accidentally. Okay, so today we're going to focus on this product of two matrices. And We're going to write it, if I take this entire ensemble of numbers, and I represent it by a single capital letter A, think of this column of numbers as a single symbol X, and let's put B on this side. We're actually going to think of this equation as being A times X is equal to B, and our point is to actually understand exactly what this product of a matrix and a vector is, or a matrix and a column vector. What is that? Okay, so here again is what we mean by a matrix. It's a rectangular arrangement of numbers in which you put them in a rectangular array with a fixed number of rows and columns. Each row space and column space is occupied by some number. And in fact, we use the notation wherein the individual entries of a matrix, they're labeled by their position in the matrix. So here in this first row and first column, we have a certain number, A subscript 1, 1. So these entries of the matrix, the individual numbers that we're using to fill out the matrix, I'm labeling them by a letter so that you think of it as a sort of a variable thing that we can adjust in any particular example. But I'm also labeling it by the position that we're going to put that number inside the matrix. Always remember that the first index corresponds to a row index, and the second index corresponds to the column in which an element lives. All right, now, our notion of matrix multiplication is defined as follows. If you have a matrix that has m columns, call that A, and you have another matrix that has the same number of rows as the first matrix A has columns, then we'll be able to define and compute the matrix product AB. Here's how that goes. What we do we draw a picture of this. Say we have a matrix A. Let's make it a 2x2. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And let's have a matrix B, 1, 0, -1, 1. All right, so I'm going to write these guys right next to one another. 3, 4, and 1, 0, -1, 1. And I'm going to describe what this product is. What I'll do is I'll describe it component by component. The rule is, as shown on the slide here, is to get the entry in the ith row and jth column of this product. What I'll do is take the dot product of a particular row with the first matrix, and that's going to be an ordered list of numbers. So it'll be an ordinary vector as well, or interpretable as an ordinary vector. The columns of B are also going to be ordered lists of m numbers, because B is actually going to have m separate rows. And what I'll do is interpret the rows of A as vectors, the columns of B as ordinary vectors, and I'll take their dot product. They're automatically going to have the same dimension. Why? Because for a given row, there are going to be m columns. And so here in this first row, I have exactly two entries. That's the same number of entries that occur in the first column of B. So I can take the dot product of this row vector with this column vector. In fact, that's exactly what we need to compute. To get the entry in the first row and first column of this product, what we do is we take the first row of the first factor and we take its dot product with, well, also you having an index one there. So it's, sorry, this should be a column. Column one of the second factor. Now, what is that? I'm going to write this as 1, 2. Okay, so that's the first row of A. And then the first column of B, well, that's going to be 1, -1, 1, -1. And now, thinking of ordered list of numbers, I can take this dot product. It's going to be 1 first component times the first component plus the second component times the first, the second component, the second factor. So that's going to be 1 plus 1 plus minus 2 equals minus 1. Okay, so what I've computed so far here is the entry in the first row and first column of this product. And what it worked out to be was the number minus 1. All right, so I'll do many more examples of this, but that's how you get one component of the product of these two matrices. In general, to get the other components, you simply vary the row of the first factor and you vary the columns of the second factor, and you take all possible dot products in that fashion. Then once you've computed them, you put them in an appropriate slot in an n by p matrix. Okay, now, the first thing to point out is that this formula for computing the ijth entry of the product matrix AB only works when this dot product is defined, and that dot product is only going to be defined if the vector I use for the ith row of A has the same dimension as the vector I use for the jth column of B. And so that's why we put the stipulation on that A has to have m columns, and if this product is defined, B also has to have m rows, because you're going to be correlating elements in the rows of the first factor with elements in the column of the same factor. You need to have the same number in both. Okay, and then another thing that comes from this, about from this definition, is that you can predict at least the dimensions of the matrix that's going to be produced via this matrix product. So here I have a formula for computing a whole bunch of numbers. A, the product AB, its ith j component, its component in its ith row and jth column. And how many choices do I have for this number, this index I? Well, A is an n by n matrix. That means it has n rows and m columns. So in any particular row, we're going to march across the columns to get the entries in that row. And so the column vectors, the row vectors for the matrix A are going to be m-dimensional vectors. In any particular row, you're going to have m columns, and so m entries in that row. The matrix B, and so I guess what I'm going to do for this is that row index I, it's going to range between, well, the first row and the last row. And meanwhile, the column index is going to, that is going to range between the first column and the last column. So in fact, as we grab these rows of the matrix A, we're going to have n choices for those. So that's going to leave us n choices for the index I. And then similarly, B is going to be an M by P matrix. So each column has, well, once we fix the column, we move down it. Once we fix the column, we move down it by changing the row index. So it's going to have M possible indices, or M distinct indexes. And so so we're going to get M choices for the index J in this formula. And so how many numbers can I compute via this formula I'm circulating? I have N choices for I, M choices for J, so I'm going to have, P choices for J. So this was M by P. So Any particular, yeah, it's gonna be key choices. So for any, the numbers I, the subscripts can range from one to N, and then and the subscript J can range from one to P. And so in the end result, what happens here, when you multiply an N by M matrix times an N by P matrix, you get another, get a whole bunch of numbers that can be arranged into the form of a matrix with N rows and P columns. And that's what this formula at the bottom of the screen is trying to say. At the bottom of that slide is trying to say, if you take a matrix with M rows and M columns, and you multiply it times a matrix with M rows and P columns, what's going to get kicked out by that product is going to be a matrix with N rows and P columns. So the thing to note here is that the when I write this formula out on the bottom line there is that the middle dimensions, the M, those numbers have to match, and the outer numbers on the left-hand side, those are going to give you the dimensions of the product of the two matrices. All right, so let me clarify this with some explicit examples. Okay, so here in this example, what I've done, all right, let me pause here. What I've done here is I've written two matrices adjacent to one another. In this example, actually, the product of the first matrix and the second matrix doesn't make any sense according to the formula that appeared on the preceding slide. I'll show you why. So here we have a matrix with three rows in a single column. So it's a 3x1 matrix. The second factor is a matrix with three rows and two columns, so a 3x2 matrix. Notice that the number of columns in the first factor does not match the number of rows of the second factor. And so it's going to be impossible for us to compute the dot product of this first row of the first factor with the first column, for example, of the second factor. I cannot take a one-dimensional vector and take its dot product with a three-dimensional vector. That's going to be true for every component of this product. It's just not, the dot products that you want to utilize are simply not going to be defined. And so that matrix product itself is undefined. Again, how I see that is I notice there's a mismatch between the column dimension of the first factor and the row dimension of the second factor. Because of this, the product is undefined. It makes as much sense mathematically as 0 divided by 3. We've been teaching you since elementary school that in fact 0 divided by 3 is not a number. It's not anything mathematical at all. It's just undefined and useless to us, you know, at least in a mathematical sense. Okay, so the next thing I want to point out is that, well, let me begin by reminding you that there's two ways of associating a matrix to a vector. So in this course, particularly at this stage of the course, a vector is simply an ordered list of numbers. So I'm writing it down on papers in a way that kind of looks like a horizontal matrix, but all I want you to do is think of this as the specification of numbers A1 through AN in a particular order. Now, from that ordered list, I can take the same numbers and order them vertically. I'm still ordering them. I'm still going from A1 to AN. It's just that the way I'm depicting that on a piece of paper is I'm arranging those numbers vertically. Well, that rectangular arrangement is going to be an N by 1 matrix, distinct from this original ordered list. Or what I can do is I can take this same list of numbers and I can write them one by one in their natural order horizontally. And in that way, what I create is a matrix with one row and N separate columns. So it's a 1 by N matrix. Okay, so the upshot of this is that the objects that we've been studying for the first 2 weeks, this notion of vectors, ordered list of numbers, there's two different ways of converting them into our new objects that we're calling matrices. We can write these numbers either vertically or horizontally. So we actually have two choices as to what kind of matrix we'll associate to a given ordered list of numbers. By the way, in this course, when we need to take an ordered list of numbers and think of it as a matrix, so in this course, by convention, we'll naturally take that first choice to represent a given vector as a number. So an ordered list say A1 to AN is usually interpreted as a column vector or an N by one matrix. And in fact, that allows us to actually manipulate ordered lists of numbers in essentially the same fashion as we are now going to be manipulating matrices. Well, you can think of this as a special case of a matrix, one that comes from an ordered list of numbers. All right, so let me show you something about this. So here, what I'm showing in this example is a 2x2 matrix, a matrix with two rows and two columns, written right next to a 2x1 matrix, a matrix with two rows and a single column. Now, that product is actually going to be defined. I've written those things adjacent to one another. I want to interpret it as a product. So if you look at that, 1, 2, minus 1, 2. Adjacent to that is matrix 1, minus 1. This is a 2x2. This is a matrix with two rows and a single column. We have the match that we need for this to actually legitimately define a product. And in fact, we can readily compute that product, right? I'm going to take the dot product to get the entry in the first row and first column of that product. I'm going to take the row vector corresponding to the first row of the first vector, and I'm going to take its dot product with the first column, the first and only column of the second factor. And so what do we get here? We're going to get in this 1-1 slot, 1 times 1 plus 2 times the second component of that column, it's going to be minus 1. So that's the 1-1 element in the product. And similarly, I can use the second row of the first factor. I can take its dot product with that one and only column of the second factor. And what I'll get in this instance is minus 1 times 1 plus 2 times minus 1. And now I simply do the arithmetic. 1 plus negative 2 is minus 1. Negative 1 plus negative 2 is minus 3. Okay, so there, I've explicitly computed the matrix product of this 2x2 matrix and this two-dimensional column vector. All right, so that's my first example of how to multiply a vector times a matrix. I write the vector as a column matrix, and then I can carry out the matrix multiplication. By the way, before I move on to a second example, let me write here that I could, what if I had written instead 1 minus 1, and I had put the 2x2 matrix on the opposite side? All right, so I'm using the same two matrices and I'm writing them in a different order. Well, here we have a matrix with two rows and a single column, and it's trying to multiply a matrix that has two rows and two columns. We have a mismatch here. And so this is undefined. Our definition of matrix multiplication only works when the number of columns in the first factor equals the number of rows in the second factors. Okay, so there was actually only one way of multiplying this particular column vector by this matrix. It's the first example I gave you. But so here is that computation. All right, now I can also, I don't have to write the ordered list 1-1 as a column vector. I could also write it as a row vector. A row vector actually being a matrix with a single row, but multiple columns. And let's see, is this defined? Yes, it is. Notice I have, in this example here, what I'm doing now is I'm writing 1-1 as a horizontal row vector times the same 2x2 matrix, -1, 2, but then this is a matrix with a single row, two columns, and it's multiplying a matrix with two rows and two columns. Here we have the match. The match that's needed so that this matrix product is going to be defined. Let's compute it. I take the dot product of this one and only row vector with the first column to get the 1-1 entry of the product. So I have 1 times 1, which is 1, plus -1 times -1. And then that sum is going to give me the first component of the result of this product. To get the component in the second row, I take one and only row with the first matrix, and I take its dot product with the second row here. And so what that will give me is 1 times -1 plus -1 times 2. And then we do the addition. What we'll get is 1 plus 1 is 2, and we'll get -1 plus -2 is -3, I guess. And indeed, upon commutation, I did this wrong. What I do is I take row vectors in the first factor and take their dot product with column vectors. So I did this right. And then second instance, I should take, I should do this the way I actually compute it, 1-1 in practice, rather than 1, 2, -1, 2. Okay, equals. -1 dotted with, we're looking at the 1-1 entry, so that's going to be, that takes its dot product with this 1-1 column, 1-1. So I think of these as ordered lists. I'll put them in parentheses. And then I move on to the second possible column I can take a dot product with this row is, and that's going to be 1-1 dotted with the second column, which is 2-2. And then when I compute these dot products, that's when I get this result, 2-0. Okay, so I'm sorry I screwed up the initial computation. But here's the result of the two examples. In the first example, I take the ordered list 1-1. I think of it as a two-dimensional column vector, and I multiply it from the left by this 2x2 matrix. And I get -1, 3 as a result. In the second example, I take the same ordered list, but I write it as a row vector, a matrix with one row and multiple columns. Its matrix product with this two matrix is defined, and when we work it out, it works out to be another row matrix, a matrix with a single row and two columns. And what I wanted to point out by comparing these two results is that I have two different ways of making a matrix from a vector. Here, the right-hand side is the first product, the left-hand side is the second vector, correspond to the same ordered list of numbers, 1 minus 1. But when I compute their products with the same matrix, 1, 2, first of all, the order has to be written in a certain way, otherwise, the products are not defined. And even if I can get both products to be defined, the results are going to be different. So what does this tell us? It tells us that unexpected things can happen when you multiply matrices together. Things that look similar enough are going to produce vastly different results. The result of the first multiplication produces a matrix that's completely different than the result of the second multiplication. Okay, so that's interesting. Well, we're certainly going to have to be careful as we work out examples of matrix products. At least initially, we're going to stick completely to the definitions in order to compute these things. All right, here's yet another example, where I'm going to compute the product of a 2x2 matrix with another 2x2 matrix. All right, so before we compute, let's verify that we're going to get something tangible out of it. Here we're multiplying a 2x2 matrix by a 2x2 matrix. Notice that these inner dimensions, the number of columns of the first factor has to equal the number of the rows of the second factor. So we have a match, so the product is defined. All right, it's defined. Let's proceed to compute it. It's going to have, let's call the first matrix. Let's call B the second matrix. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to systematically compute all the entries of this product matrix. Now, those entries are going to be computed by taking rows of the first factor and taking their dot product with the columns of the second factor. So 1, 1 is going to be the first row of A, its dot product with the first column of B. The entry in the 1, 2 slot of the product is going to be the dot product of still the first row of A, but now the second column of B. And we have two more entries to compute. That'll be 2, 1, and entries A, B, 2, 2. Because I could also choose to use the first row of A and the first column of B, or I can use the second row of A and the second column of B. These are all easily computed, but now, when A is equal to 2, 1, minus 1, 1, and B is the matrix 1, minus 1, minus 1, 2, then, for example, computation of this 1, 1 entry of the product is going to be the first row of A, 2, 1. And we'll take its dot product with the first column of B. So I'll write that horizontally, 1 minus 1. And what we're going to get is 2 plus minus 1 equals 1. So the entry in the first row and first column of the product of the matrices A and B is going to be the number 1. In fact, remaining three entries I've worked out on the slide. What we'll get, we'll calculate this number by taking this dot product, we're going to get the number 0. When we take the dot product of the second row of A with the first column of B, we're going to get the number minus 2. When we take the dot product of the second row of A with the second column of B, we're going to get this 2-2 entry of the product, and it's going to end up being the number 3. Now, I could also can carry out this product in the reverse order, because again, the number of columns in the first factor still equals the number of rows of the second factor. We can compute it, explicitly taking dot products of rows of B with columns of A. And what it will work out to be is this 2x2 matrix, 3-0 in the first row, minus 4-1 in the second row. So what this example shows is that, unlike multiplication of numbers, so if X and Y are numbers, X times Y always equals Y times X. 2 times 8 equals 8 times 2. They both equal 16, right? This familiar property of numbers. This is nothing similar for matrices or for matrix multiplication. This last example shows that the order of the factors is actually going to affect the end result. In fact, what I'll show you next is, in fact, you can have a product AB of matrices for which the opposite product, when I write the factors in the inverse order, is not even defined. So here's an example. Let's suppose A is a matrix with n rows and m columns. B is a matrix with m rows and p columns. Then that matrix product is going to be defined, because if you look at these dimensions, the number of columns of the first factor does indeed equal the number of rows of the second factor. And so this product is going to produce a matrix with n rows and p columns. However, the opposite product, or reverse the order of the factors, is now multiplying a matrix with m rows and p columns times a matrix with n rows and n columns. But now those inner dimensions are not going to match. They only match in a very special case when p is equal to n. But the first line is always true, no matter what n and p is. Here, we only get a well-defined product when p is equal to n. So here's an example of an arbitrary n by m matrix. It's capable of multiplying another m by p matrix, and it's a legitimate product. It will be computable. But if I try to compute the product in the opposite order, it's not only going to be different, it's in fact not even going to be defined. Okay, so the moral of these last few examples is that you have to be very careful when you perform matrix multiplication, because you constantly have to pay strict attention to the order of factors. So, note bene, be careful here. Later on, we're going to be manipulating equations in where we're multiplying matrices together. And so if I have, say I have an equation that one matrix is equal to another matrix, and maybe I want to manipulate this equation, just like, you know, like if you had 7x is equal to 4, the way you would solve this is you would multiply both sides by 1/7, right? That's a typical arithmetic operation that allows you to solve equations. We try to do something similar to a matrix equation. Well, so does this imply that A times B is equal to A times C? Well, it looks like I'm doing exactly the same thing. I am doing exactly the same thing to both sides of this equation. So if they were equal to begin with, if I do the same thing to both sides, yeah, this should be true. But what's common when you're doing calculations by hand is to take this equation and simply write AB is equal to CA. Again, I'm multiplying both sides by A, but in a different way. On the left-hand side, I'm multiplying the matrix B from the left by A. On the right-hand side, I'm multiplying by A, but I'm multiplying from the opposite side. So these are not going to be the same. So what I'm warning you about is that later, if we use matrix multiplication to compute things, maybe to solve equations, we have to make pay strict attention to the ordering of factors. Because if we naively say, oh, here's my equation, I'll multiply both sides by the same matrix, I have to do so correctly. This is a legitimate operation. And if this is true, this will still be true because I'm doing exactly the same thing to both sides. But this equation does not imply this equation because I'm not doing the same thing to both sides of the original equation. On the left-hand side, I'm multiplying B from the left by A. On the right-hand side of this equation, I'm multiplying the right-hand term from the right by A. So that's a different, these are different operations. And we cannot expect the equality to be maintained. Okay, so let's see here. Let me show you, we'll finish today's lecture with one other deviation from what you might expect from ordinary arithmetic. If you have two numbers and you know that they multiply together to produce zero, you can conclude that either the first factor has to equal zero or the second factor has to equal zero. But in fact, if I have two matrices that are not equal to the zero matrix, and I multiply them together, I can actually produce the matrix that has only zeros as entries. So I guess I'm introducing some nomenclature here as well. Here are my zero, what I mean by a zero matrix, that means all entries are zero. Just as when we had a zero vector, that meant every component of that vector was zero. And what I'm showing you in this slide here is I have a non-zero matrix times a non-zero matrix, and I'm producing the zero matrix. So that's different than multiplication of numbers. And in fact, this is something we're constantly going to have to be aware of, because notationally, AB looks like ordinary arithmetic, right? I write two symbols next to one another, that means I'm going to multiply them together. But what you have to be worried about, if these things are matrices, we have to use the rules for matrix multiplication, not the rules for multiplying numbers. And because of that, some of the properties of multiplying real numbers are not going to be replicated by matrix multiplication. And so you have to stay, if you're working with matrices, you have to continuously remember that they're matrices, not numbers, no matter how they might be denoted on a piece of paper. Okay, so I'll stop here, and I'll rejoin you in class, in person, on Monday at 11:30. Okay, and with that, I wish you a happy weekend. But I will stay around also in case there are some additional questions.